Choosing sides. That was the trouble with younger siblings, wasn't it? Tell them to do one thing, and they'd immediately do the opposite, was how the complaint usually went. Ignoring his brother's commands, Kavik leaped over the back of the bench into the fray. He was on a team. The White Lotus might not have been the only team he was on. It might not have been the perfect team. But it far outranked Chaisi's association, whose flag he'd burnt long ago. One of Tail's squad was a waterbender. Kavik reached out and felt around for their common weapon, quickly frisking the target from behind at a distance with his bending. He found the concealed ring-shaped tube full of water around the man's waist and pulled. He'd been hoping to burst a seam or twist the spout around, but instead he ended up yanking the wearer backward, dragging him across the street. Kavik cursed the quality craftsmanship that was apparently to be found everywhere in Taku, and worked the still-trapped water as best he could, pulling the ring bladder up the man's torso, forcing his arms above his head like a child refusing to change clothes. Kalyan tackled Kavik to the ground. While he kicked away his brother's attempts to restrain him, Kavik constricted the loop of water with all of his might, compressing the association man's neck against his own shoulder, blocking the blood flow to his head. His victim passed out as the pouch burst, spraying its contents everywhere. Kalyan managed to twist one of Kavik's arms into a hammer lock. "You numbskull," he hissed. He hauled Kavik up right before a tiny arrow embedded itself in the dirt with a pfft, narrowly missing them both. One of the non-benders on Tail's side racked some kind of mechanism under his shirt sleeve and pointed his wrist at them again. Kavik had violated neutrality. Now he was fair game. As if to reassure his underling, Kalyan quickly plucked the arrow out of the ground and water-whipped it into the leg of a White Lotus agent. The young woman stumbled in surprise and keeled over, retching violently. The tip had been poisoned. Three sharp knuckle jabs laced their way up Kavik's spine, and suddenly the world slowed, the chaos smothered under a blanket of numbness. He could have made out each flap of a dragonfly hummingbird's wings. His legs were teetering stilts, liable to collapse at any moment. Kalyan grabbed him by the hair and shoved his head down, leading him through the fray in a broken rhythm, stutter-stepping through halts and fits, wrenching him this way and that like a doomed ice-dodging ship. He heard bodies come together in tight embraces, the ensuing grunts and coughs, the strain and muffled cracks of bones breaking, the wet squelch of sharpness cleaving flesh. Kalyan stopped them short. A man collapsed like a fallen log across their path, his life spilling from his neck. Kavik couldn't tell which side he belonged to, nor make out who dragged him away behind cover. Friend and foe blurred in a sick treaty of cooperation. Don't get caught, the highest law of the land. Kavik had been caught, though. The first and only loser by these rules. He tried to raise his head, resist Kalyan's seeming insistence on him not looking. He saw Doe and Tail stalking each other through the struggle. They came to grips inside each other's pocket, mutually, horrifically vulnerable. A quick exchange of feints led to a single trapped limb, and then it was over, without a proper start. Doe slumped to his knees, his face white, his lips pressed together in a grimace. Tail kept the knife embedded in his chest like a handle, and quickly clamped his other hand over Doe's mouth and nose, to suffocate him faster. Doe locked eyes with Kavik as he died in silence. With one last spiteful glare, the firebender raised his fingers. A thin orange jet lanced outward and seared Kalyan's arm, loosening his grip. Kavik stumbled free. The White Lotus agent had given his life to his cause. Kavik couldn't waste the chance by looking back. He fled. If flight could describe his lurching, crumpled escape to the far street corner. He rounded the bend into an alley. Before he could take another step, someone grabbed him by the shoulder, turned him around, and slammed him against the brick wall. Tail. His brother's hound had run him down. The knife pressed to Kavik's windpipe was sticky with Doe's blood. Kavik could read Tail's face, even through his lingering daze. The association man was considering whether this family spat was worth the hassle, and whether an on-mission accident might not be the cleanest exit for the parties involved. The boss's little brother was an ever-growing liability. Why not show some initiative? Kavik couldn't raise his hands to defend himself. He sucked on his cheeks. Meeting death with a stupid face was the best he could do. Tail recentered his grip on his knife so he could better draw the blade across Kavik's throat, a practiced butcher.
Spit on me, will ya?
Well, yeah, if you're gonna be a slow learner about it. Kavik blew out the only source of water he had, the saliva in his mouth, focusing the moisture into tiny needles of ice with his lips. The shards spread across Tail's eyes. The association man recoiled with a scream, the first real sound of pain anyone had made yet. Surely someone would notice. Kavik left him behind and scraped along the alley wall in the direction he thought the city might be. The real city, full of normal people who went about their normal business without a care, and not this world of unclean spirits behind him. The morning sun shone through the gap ahead. If he could reach a busy street, slip inside a group of clerks heading to their jobs, then he'd be safe, shielded by witnesses. His shoulder, instead of landing on brick, met empty air. The alley had a door alcove, deep enough to hide an ambush. The person who'd been waiting in the recession sank his knife into Kavik's exposed flank. Huh, he thought. Felt like getting punched. A warm trickle ran down his side, the flow of blood almost embarrassing. The most private, intimate part of him was leaking everywhere.
I told you exactly what I would do if I caught you betraying the Avatar,
Jujinta muttered into his ear. The note of satisfaction in his voice was unmistakable. A man of his word. He extracted his blade from Kavik's body and walked away into the light. Casualties. Kavik knew if he went down, he wouldn't get back up. He had found a measure of balance over his feet, and so there he stayed. Behind him, Tail's shrieks suddenly went quiet.
Too loud, he heard Kalyan mutter.
What are you doing standing there like an idiot? We have to get out of here, now.
Kavik tried to speak, but the wound in his side opened wider. It no longer hurt like a punch. He turned around slowly, clutching his body, blinking through the searing pain. The outside of his leg was wet with blood. His brother swore like they were young again. Kalyan ran forward and dragged him back into the shadowed corner of the alley. Their parents would be so disappointed in them. Two boys with bad judgment. And yet, it was the Avatar whom Kalyan cursed.
Spirits take her, he growled. I knew something like this would... Hold on, I've got to move you. This is gonna hurt.
He grunted as he lifted Kavik onto his shoulders.
I'm sorry, Kalyan said. I have to find a place to treat you. Someplace safe and clean.
But not in public was the unspoken part. He ran, jostling the wound, and Kavik bit his own hand to muffle his scream. His blood dripped down his brother's back. They'd traveled like this through a blizzard once, bound to each other by Kavik's weakness. That was a long time ago, and he was a lot bigger now, but Kalyan's strength still prevailed. The ground flew under his older brother's feet. One of the houses close to the park must have been a suitable location, because Kalyan soon came to a stop. He kicked the door until the latch snapped and forced his way through, taking care not to slam Kavik's head against the jamb. The air inside was pungent and bitter, and through watery eyes, Kavik saw jars of medicine stacked against the wall. A beaded curtain separated the tiny room from the back. Kalyan had found the waiting area of an apothecary. He laid Kavik down on a bench the long way.
You're gonna be okay, Kalyan said,
stroking his hair with a bloody hand, doing his best to sound fully in control. That was the trouble with older siblings. They were full of it, and made everything up as they went along, just like normal people.
I'll find bandages and clean water, and I'll get you fixed. We've got plenty of both, said a familiar voice.
Akudan came in from outside and shut the door behind him. He planted his feet in the exit, an impassable human barrier. Tayagum ducked through the hanging beads. The grim, tight smile on his face was anything but a smirk of victory.
Hello, he said to Kalyan. I'm told you know who we are.
Kavik wanted to cry out a warning. His brother was dangerous. Tayagum and Akudan were too, yes, but they were older than Kalyan, and their fighting days were over. They were support, supply, innkeepers. Before he could speak, Kalyan's arms whipped out, a watery glint of sharpness aimed at their throats. Akudan and Tayagum reacted faster than their age, faster than their size, faster than anybody Kavik had ever seen outside the Avatar. And suddenly, their histories came roaring into alignment with the present. They were former quartermasters of the Water Tribe, chosen to protect a pay chest full of platinum in the middle of a foreign army. They would have had to have been some of the best close-in fighters of the entire Water Tribe. Tayagum not only dodged the water Kalyan sent at him, but added to its speed, flinging it into the ceiling behind him so hard it punched a hole through the wood. He wanted the weapon gone, refused to fall into the back-and-forth pattern of combat between waterbenders. Akudan rammed Kalyan into the wall with a clear shield of ice extending from his empty shoulder. Akudan's also a waterbender. Living with them, all of their behaviors had made it seem like only Tayagum could bend. They'd kept that surprise hidden the whole time from Kavik, in case they needed an advantage. They'd never fully trusted him, not from the day they'd met. Akudan flipped his shield into a liquid cocoon around Kalyan before Tayagum ripped the water away, revealing a series of rawhide bindings wrapped around Kalyan like bolas. The restraints must have been hidden in the ice. When rawhide lost moisture, it shrank and became hard as wood. Tayagum had dried the bindings in a feat that would have made the White Lotus proud. Kalyan's limbs were bound tight. He slumped back against the wall to keep from falling over like a worm. He couldn't bend anymore. Akudan backed away from him and plodded over to check on Kavik. The swirling arm of water extending from his body rolled back into its hidden source.
We got him?
He asked his husband. Tayagum crouched over Kalyan's slumping form and gave the confirmation.
We got him.
Kavik swallowed the fresh smear of pain in his abdomen. I need help, he gasped. The raw walls of his muscles abraded against each other. Jujinta, he went off plan.
No, he didn't, Akudan said. Why do you think we were waiting here for you?
For a brief moment, Kalyan thrashed, trying his bindings.
He understood something dark.
Come on, fellas, he said, straining for composure. Are we really doing this? My brother is wounded. He's bleeding out.
Shh,
Akudan said. His hand loomed over Kavik, a threatening creature emerging from his long sleeve. There was little light in the room. Kavik could barely see his brother.
You know what we want, Tayagum told Kalyan.
Kalyan rolled his neck, as if no request could be more unreasonable right now.
You don't need to do this, he said. You've won. You caught me.
We haven't won, Tayagum said. There's a big difference between holding a prisoner and getting them to talk. You taught the Avatar that lesson pretty good, and the two of us, well, we've known it for a long time. Did a stint in King Feishan's worst cells, and the interrogations we went through, the story alone would turn your hair white.
His frown contained a hint of pride.
Still, neither of us ever cracked. I'm hoping you're not as tough. This is your last chance to spill. Dapa's location? Chaisi's plan of attack? Give us the goods.
No answer.
Not even a crumb, huh?
Akudan sighed.
All right. If that's the way you want to play it.
He made a show of examining Kavik from one angle, then another. His brow furrowed in diagnosis.
Let me see how bad this wound really is.
He clamped his hand, solid as a tree nut, over Kavik's side. The explosion in his core stole Kavik's breath away. Deep crimson welled between Akudan's fingers. The teary whimper that escaped Kavik's lips didn't do the agony justice.
Blood's dark, Akudan mused. That's not a good sign.
What are you doing? Kalyan screamed. He's your teammate.
Is he? Tayagum said calmly. From our perspective, he's already betrayed us once. Little stoat weasels always running around, sneaking off to meet with people we don't know. Seems to me like the two of you could have been planning to escape Taku together.
No, Kavik pleaded. I wasn't trying to... Akudan squeezed again. This time, Kavik had plenty of air. Enough to howl and wail, like he thought he'd never do again past a certain age, as if pain were a trial one outgrew. His cuspook bloomed red. Kalyan tried to get up, but the older man caught him and slammed him back into the wall.
The Avatar,
Kavik gasped, latching on to any words that would save him.
She'd never let you do this.
Who says she knows what's happening right now? Tayagum said. Crazy things go on during missions. Real heat of battle stuff.
Ah, I bet she can guess, though, Akudan said. You saw that look she gave us when she ordered us to get the information at any cost. She absolutely knows the score. And if she's anything like me, she is sick of this miserable, stinking family.
With each pause, he twisted his hand back and forth, grinding deeper into Kavik's flank. Kavik convulsed and snapped the back of his skull against the bench, almost hard enough to knock himself out.
I don't know where Tapa is, he heard his brother shout. Chaisi kept his location to herself. She didn't trust me with the final steps of the plan.
Then what good are you to us?
Tayagum roared back in his face. Kalyan's collapse was final.
Please, he begged. I know the signal for Tapa to attack the Convocation Hall. He moves on a specific command. 3 gong strikes at the wrong hour.
Come on now. Does that seem worth your brother's life? How long between the signal and the attack? What's his escape route? Give us more.
I don't have any more, Kalyan screamed. I swear.
Not great, Tayagum said. But it'll have to do.
He looked over his shoulder and called out.
Did you get that?
I did.
Jujinto's voice was unmistakable behind the bead curtain.
I'll deliver the message to her.
He took off, his footsteps growing faint. Akudan reached under the bench and began to stack rolls of bandages on Kavik's chest, redness already seeping into the edges of the cloth.
I'm envious, he said. Your brother chose you over the mission. I guess there really is no stronger bond than family.
Blinking first. Yang Chen looked into Chai Si's eyes with honest admiration. The Zhongdu of Zhandori had simply given herself so much permission. If license to act freely in this world were a currency, then Chai Si had built a hoard to make the Avatar jealous.
How many men and women in the entirety of the Four Nations could claim to be as unfettered as her? Monarchs and gurus, and few others. No wonder Chaisi read so much Lahima and Shokan. Only those exalted minds could equal her in certainty of purpose. Yang Chen couldn't claim such greatness. Lines had been drawn all around her in a cracked glass web. To cross any one of them would condemn her as a bad avatar, a bad air nomad, a failure by innumerable past and future standards. No direction led to a clean getaway. She took one last look at Taku. The deep green harbor, the gentle slope of its hills. Iwashi hadn't been completely hands-off in his duties. Like the caretaker of a miniature topiary, he'd made decisions to prune and allow certain growth, favoring tidy businesses and refined industries that fit the image of prosperity embraced by all four elements. Viewed from this angle, by an audience of a blessed few, the cityscape was a harmonious balance of sea and wind and fertile earth, warmed by the sun. A painting of perfection. What a crock. Yang Chen could fly. She saw things from above. And Taku, like every great success, was an elaborate piece of stagecraft. She knew that outside the city limits, paper mills belched noxious odors into the sky, as vats of slurry stewed in alchemical fixers. Farther down the trade routes, silk pillars died by the thousands of millions, boiled in their cocoons to unravel their threads. Entire villages of workers along the famous perfume trails had permanently damaged their senses of smell and taste from mixing batches of product by hand. No one ever liked to look too closely at writhing, screeching humanity, not even in the most benign circumstances. The air temples had an expression regarding outside visitors who were shocked and disappointed by the incredible volume of chores the monks and nuns had to busy themselves with to support a few hours per day of meditation and study. Weak eyelids. Enlightenment was a muscle, and the world was too heavy for most. Yang Chen reached toward the door of the balcony, her fingers splayed. She quickly closed them into a cranefish beak form. The brickwork of the wall pinched shut, defying the solidness of baked clay and mortar with a snapping, grinding noise. She gave her hand a twist, and the wall locked itself into a spiral as tight as the petals of a flower in the cold. She'd moved quicker than Chaisi could react. The Zhongdu startled away from the trickling dust. "What are you doing?" she said. "We had privacy enough." Yang Chen didn't reply. She leaned back and punched a gust of wind up at the great bronze gong, knocking the metal so it rang, sending a deep, clashing buzz through the convocation hall and into the heart of Taku. The act wasn't easy with her native element. Air normally pushed against surfaces. It didn't strike or make an impact. She punched again, harder, and a second reverberation rolled over the city. Under different circumstances, she might have paused there to give Chaisi a chance to respond. She'd demonstrated sufficient proof of knowledge. But in this world, Nujian was dead. An entire island of people had vanished, and Yang Chen had swallowed her fill of half measures. For emphasis, more than anything else, she leaped straight up and angled an overhead kick at the gong for a third sharp gust, a heels-overhead strike. She finished the flip by landing on all fours, cracking the balcony floor under her knuckles. A sheet of rock sprouted from the ground below, a landslide that defied gravity. The stone lapped over the entire platform, trapping the two of them firmly inside the walls. Light filtered through minuscule cracks in the stone, like the gaps between fingers. They'd become two insects in a giant's cupped hand. Yang Chen could see her fellow prisoner. The normally unflappable Zhongdu pushed on the twisted bricks blocking the doorway, trying to get back inside. "What nonsense are you playing at?" Chaisi shouted.
She pounded her fist over each section of the wall in turn, searching for weak spots, methodical even, while her fear grew.
Release me! This instant!
Are we going to behave? Yang Chen directed the silent question at herself with more than a little sarcasm. Now, in the crucial moment, she couldn't afford losing her surroundings to old fears. The confined space had no terrors for her. She imagined her former selves backing away from the present, wanting to stay clear of her folly, leaving her still Yang Chen. Do you know what makes an air nomad an air nomad? She said. The ability to sit quietly with oneself, anywhere, any place, without want or plan. I thought the two of us might try that together. Chaisi wheeled on her.
We can't stay here.
Why not? Yang Chen had chased the complete picture for so long to no avail. Now was the time to see what willful ignorance might reap. We shouldn't be in any danger. This space is no different from a hermit's cell. Certainly, no harm will come to you by my hand. Yang Chen leaned closer, her grin uncontrollable. I happen to know that Dapa requires a little bit of time to work up to a really large blast. I might be able to save us before then, if you give me his location. With trembling hands, Chaisi made gestures of calmness. A few strands of loose hair brushed behind her ears. A deep breath. So this is your game. Betting it all on who blinks first? I didn't paint you as such an irresponsible leader. Her nimble mind would reach for any thread it could to weave together a safety net. Think about the situation you'd leave behind, Avatar, Chaisi said, trying to outpace the last few falling grains of sand in the hourglass. Taku in chaos, the four nations in disarray. You don't want to depart this world bearing such heavy regrets now, would you? Yang Chen stared at her, before bursting into laughter. Chaisi startled backward. Yang Chen's shrill howls bounced and redoubled inside the small enclosure. Regrets? Threatening the Avatar with regrets was like trying to drown a fish. She knew that now. Yang Chen would be doomed to an eternity of reflection upon her errors, no matter her choices. I can't leave this world, she gasped as she wiped a tear from her eye. I'm trapped. I always come back. Haven't you heard? If she were bound to this rock, then she'd use her chains as a weapon. You, on the other hand, Zhongdu Chaisi, think about what you'd leave behind. The whites of Chaisi's eyes grew. A forward-thinking person like yourself would have made plenty of assurances for your sudden and untimely absence, Yang Chen said. Your organization can survive without its head until it finds a new one. And you've probably drawn up contracts to leave money where you see fit. That much was certainly true. The wealthiest individuals paid considerable attention to how their riches would live on past them. But there was a deep difference between planning for one's death and facing it. I'm sure you can trust your subordinates with your legacy, given how exemplary a leader you are. Yang Chen giggled. Some tales were too hard to spin with a straight face. She wasn't that good an actor. I'd bet the world that your son will be well taken care of by all of those men and women. You've paid. Chaisi cast her head down. He's under the hull, she whispered. No, too soon. I need to see you mean it. Yang Chen crossed her arms and remained where she was. Didn't you hear me? Chaisi's warble was the first note of true desperation Yang Chen had ever heard from her.
There's a basement under the floorboards of the convocation hall. Tapa is sealed inside. You have to extract him.
I'm sorry, Yang Chen said calmly. You've fed me so many lies that I can't take your word at face value anymore. I go down there, find nothing. You take the chance to escape. I won't fall for your tricks.
What is wrong with you?
Chaisi grabbed her robes and yanked her close with the strength of a person who finally had something to lose.
There's no more time!
She searched the Avatar's face in confusion. An understanding passed between them. Despite her earlier advice, Chaisi did have some pride remaining in her after all, because the last of it crumbled away before Yang Chen's very eyes. The Zhongdu of Zhan Duri sank to her knees. She lowered herself, still clutching Yang Chen's robes, and did as so many crowds had done before in this era and eras past.
Avatar Yang Chen, she begged. Save me, please.
Hidden from witnesses, the two of them could reach their nadirs together. Chaisi, the adherent, the follower, and Yang Chen, a statue in an alcove.
I made a mistake, Chaisi said. I put us in danger. This is all my fault, my doing.
They were most of the way there. A true declaration of repentance had a crucial ingredient. Was the Zhongdu insightful enough to grasp it in time? Chaisi raised her head. Tears welled in her eyes.
Please, she cried. I'll do anything to make it right.
Good enough. Yang Chen leaped straight up, bursting through the top of the enclosure, the stone shattering around her shoulders. She air-spouted higher and higher, past the gong she'd struck to call forth Tapa from his hiding place, the roof of the hall shrinking under her feet. The effort was easier than normal, even for a master of the technique, as if her very body were emptier. From up here, Taku was so miniature and unreal. She was tempted to take a step out of the whirling funnel to see if she could follow Lahima into the nothingness of legend. Another day, perhaps. Yang Chen focused her attention below and committed the real, irresponsible, self-destructive, unforgivable act of today. With the man who could kill her undoubtedly moments away from doing so, she entered the Avatar state. The hall was an architect's model. On an earthen plate, it could be swiveled to the side. The centerpiece of Taku shifted in accordance with Yang Chen's will, following her body's command. A tectonic drift, localized to a single block. Surely everyone who could see her was screaming in terror. The posts of the building snapped like twigs. With borrowed power, she shunted the entire hall, Chaisi still inside, to the edge of the street. The building drooped in front of a crowd of bewildered onlookers like a damaged cake, a ridiculous sight. A once-proud landmark nudged to the left. Once the excavated pit of the lowest floors had been revealed, Yang Chen fell out of the sky and landed in the western side of the foundation, which just so happened to be roughly the length of an airball court. Even the decapitated load-bearing pillars to the left and right resembled the footposts of her people's game. The eastern side had been converted to a squalid burrow, full of filth and half-gnawed rations. A sole occupant stood keeper. Tapa. Chaisi had stashed him under the target location itself, outfoxing Yang Chen and anyone else who might have known that one of his chief advantages was range. No wonder they hadn't been able to find him. The vibrations of the gong had reached him in his hole, though, a signal that could have penetrated any location in Taku. The firebender breathed in and out
head lowered meditatively, completely unperturbed by the havoc Yang Chen had caused. He seemed determined to carry out his orders, heedless of the circumstances. Dapa inhaled one last time and looked up at her. There was a glassy, distant sheen to his eyes, from hunger or isolation or something else she couldn't identify. The selfish cunning that normally oozed from the man was nowhere to be found in his blank expression. He'd finished the lengthy build-up for his technique. There they were, the Avatar and Unanimity, two great powers on opposite ends of a wavering scale, straddling the pivot of the world. "Don't," Yang Chen said. "You have..." Dapa leaned his head back far enough to give her a look up his nostrils. His stomach caved inward. "You have a choice," was what Yang Chen was going to say. But apparently, Dapa felt compelled to continue down his destructive path, just like Chai Si and Fei Shan and every short-sighted being Yang Chen had ever pleaded with. He threw his head forward and let loose the ability he'd worked so hard for, survived, and betrayed his comrades for. All that power had to go somewhere. The distinct pop-pop of unanimity sounded. No matter, Yang Chen thought, strangely at peace as she brought her hands up. This is all right. She'd made a choice of her own long ago. Appetite for Bitter. Before Taku. The cave in Taihua, as far away from the northern temple as could be reached in a single flight, was just a cave. No air nomads or gurus had ever resided there, as far as Yang Chen knew, and there were no accommodations to keep out the cold. A campfire, easily seen from afar, would have been a bad idea. So when Yang Chen returned to the isolated mouth in the mountains on Nujian, she saw Ying Su huddled against a rock, warming herself with the breath of fire technique. Yang Chen couldn't help feeling strange, watching someone who possessed such extreme abilities use the most rudimentary of skills. It was easy to forget the woman was also a firebender who could perform the basics. She wouldn't cook her food by blowing it up. Yang Chen hopped off Nujian and landed on the ledge jutting from the cave while he loitered higher in the ridge line. In the faint dawn sun, half of Ying Su was a looming shadow. "How's the monk?" she asked as she stared across the valley. "Ming Yur?" Yang Chen sat down next to the firebender and rubbed her eyes. "I ruptured his lungs and eardrums. I nearly killed him."
"You saved his life," Ying Su said. "I don't know how, but Dapa would have blown him to bits. I'm not exactly sure what you did with the..."
She searched for words, expanded and contracted her hands in an attempt to describe what she'd witnessed. She'd have some difficulty there. A void was invisible by definition, and Ying Su had never been on the receiving end of the forbidden airbending technique that had neutralized Tapa and Xiao Yun in Bin Er. Yang Chen, lacking any other option, had tried to snuff out Tapa's blast with a sudden, violent version of the maneuver, centering the vacuum on the pinpoint terminus of the shot. And spirits be praised, it had worked. Not without cost, though. Ming Yur had been caught in the radius of the bubble, subject to both the sudden instantaneous lack of air and then the battering turbulence of the winds rushing back to fill the empty space. Yang Chen had inflicted almost as much damage on him as the shockwave of a real explosion. She'd innovated a worse version of an already deadly technique.
"You got him to ground," Ying Su said. "Covered him long enough for Tapa to give up and retreat."
The firebender frowned as she processed the events.
"He must have escaped with help.
I can't believe his rescuers would let him take a shot at me and Xiaoyun.
I don't know, Yang Chen said. Maybe he fit their needs better, and they didn't want you anymore. You could have been demoted from asset to loose end. There's no way to be sure.
Ying Su swore and kicked her heel at the rock below. Yang Chen watched her carefully. The danger they'd faced together, the attempt on her life by her former comrades, seemed to have changed Ying Su's attitude toward the avatar who'd kept her prisoner for so long. Key pieces were flipped in moments like this.
So Xiaoyun is really dead?
Ying Su asked. Yang Chen nodded.
So are you. You played a convincing corpse. The opportunity to deceive the world had presented itself in the hospital, and she was glad they'd taken it. Right now, I am the one person who knows you're alive. It'll stay that way, provided you live discreetly and avoid trouble from here on out.
You would really let me go free?
While the firebenders remained in her custody, Yang Chen had spent every single night trying to decide what to do with them. She hadn't been able to find a solution until now. Ironically, Tapa's escape and betrayal had simplified things for her.
If you keep your head down, Yang Chen said, try to cause trouble with your ability and you'd raise a flag to many dangerous people throughout the world, including the group that just tried to kill you. Being hunted is no way to live.
Ying Su made a low grunt.
Where would I go?
I have friends like you who were treated like pawns and suffered for it. I set them up with new lives. Keep in mind, I could place you anywhere in the world. Air nomad privileges. I can fly over borders, wherever you might want to settle. Which island in the Fire Nation do you come from?
I'm from the Earth Kingdom,
Ying Su said, causing Yang Chen to sputter in surprise.
I mean, at least some of my ancestors were Fire Nation, obviously. But I come from a village of mountain guides in Kolau.
I always thought the reason I survived unanimity was because I had good lungs, was used to breathing thin air.
She gazed over the terrain with the universal haggardness of a person whose adventure hadn't turned out the way she'd hoped.
My parents tried moving to new parts, but we got caught on the wrong side of the platinum affair and weren't able to return.
Just like Kavik.
The rocky terrain surrounding them would have been familiar to someone who grew up in Kolau. Yang Chen waited for the barbs of homesickness to hook themselves into the firebender.
There's a catch, she said.
Ying Su snorted.
And here I thought you were different than the other team.
Not different enough. I want to know exactly how many people in the world can do what you do, Yang Chen said.
I couldn't tell you for certain.
She saw the glare Yang Chen was giving her.
No, really. Tapa, Xiaoyun, and I were the first to complete our training on the island. But there were other groups behind us, still in the earlier stages of the program.
She shuddered.
They were younger.
There would be time for anger later, Yang Chen decided, tamping down the rising heat inside her. Right now, she needed a clear head.
Then tell me where this island is, so I can check for myself. You don't have to be exact. The stars at night, landmarks, which way the wind blew. If you knew what direction you set sail from, I have to go there.
They took care to keep us in the dark, Ying Su said. But lucky for you, orienteering is in my blood. I can tell you where to search for the camp.
She paused.
What?
Yang Chen was wary. Revealing what you wanted was always the most vulnerable part of any negotiation. She wouldn't be surprised if one of Dapa's former allies had learned a thing or two from him about holding out for more compensation. But Ying Su had a different need in mind.
You said you didn't fully trust your companions. If suddenly you know where unanimity was developed, then it becomes obvious you learned from a first-hand source.
Someone could deduce you were still alive. Clever of her to make the connection.
Yang Chen thought it a shame she couldn't make Ying Su an above-board member of the group. Chai Si had wasted her potential on destructive power instead of harnessing her smarts. This was a problem. And the solution was ugly.
I could create a ruse, Yang Chen muttered. Run it on my own team. Have them complete a fake mission and claim that was how I learned about the island.
The advantages of pulling such a trick were many. A mission to nowhere, attacking a useless target, would not only keep a valuable source like Ying Su hidden from the White Lotus. It might also convince Chai Si that the Avatar was hopelessly chasing dust on the wind and lull the Zhongdu into a false sense of security. Right before Yang Chen actually struck out for the island, the ideal patsy would even present itself in Taku.
But I'd have to lie to my companions, she considered out loud. More than I already have. Even an easy errand has risks.
Is this the same group who helped you take me and Hunshe and the others down?
Yang Chen didn't respond. In Bin'er, Kavik, Jujinta, Taiyagum, and Akudan had all voluntarily run into mortal danger for her sake. Taking advantage of their loyalty had to cross a line.
I'll assume that's a yes, Ying Su said. They'll be fine. If you can't trust your friends, then at least trust them to be competent. Your people are skilled.
Yang Chen didn't want to dwell on the issue anymore for now. She had time to decide how low she would sink. Stand, she said to Ying Su. There's another task I want from you as part of this deal. The firebender didn't correct her language, implying that the bargain had already been struck. A good sign. She rose and kept rising and rising. Ying Chen had to take a step back. She'd forgotten how tall the woman was.
Well? Ying Su asked.
I want you to try to blow me up.
What?
You're going to perform your technique, and I'm going to see if I can repeat the trick I did to save Ming Yur on command. I want to be able to completely nullify Tapa if I see him again, even if he's attacking me directly. You're going to be my practice partner. The ledge in front of the cave was fairly long, about enough space to hold an Agni Kai should the notion take them. Yang Chen walked to the far edge and turned around. She'd seen Ying Su's control with her own eyes, how small and focused a blast she could make, as opposed to Tapa's and Xiaoyun's over-the-top explosions. By her estimations, this exercise was feasible, only half a folly. The advantage she stood to gain by succeeding was immeasurable. The firebender stared at her from across the flat plain, still in shock.
Do you have a death wish? I'm not going to shoot you point blank.
Yang Chen counted on her fingers the reasons why she should do just that. I saved you from bleeding out in Bin'er. I saved you from Tapa. And I hold the keys to your chance at ever living in peace. You are so deep in my pocket, you're covered in lint. If I want you to attack me, then you attack me. Pivoting this burgeoning relationship back to matters of debt could have been the wrong choice. But Yang Chen needed to extract as much value as she could from her erstwhile prisoner while she had the chance, for a reason she would never admit to anyone. I could have just killed you. Had Yang Chen simply disposed of the three firebenders with the same ruthlessness that Kavik's brother had shown Hunshe, then all of her problems would have been solved. By the scales of logic, she should have done it. She should have denied Chai Si the opportunity to steal back her assets. She'd passed over the chance to eliminate them in the heat of battle,
when she would have been justified by the unfolding chaos. I was defending myself and Bin-Er. A much bleaker act would have been to lose her prisoners in the mountains once she found them unwilling to talk. A terrible burden on the spirit, but on her spirit. The one the world thought a reasonable sacrifice for the greater good. It would have all been so very convenient. Another avatar would have decided to, easily. This she knew for a fact, from having lived through so many similar moments. But she hadn't acted on the impulse. And now the notion that the world would have been better off had she made the rational choice to eliminate 3 highly dangerous people would forever lie with her in bed. It would sit with her when she meditated, sup from the same bowl at mealtimes, and die every sunset from here on out. I need to know my mercy was worth something, she thought as she looked at Yingsu. I need to know that keeping you alive until now wasn't a mistake, that there are merits to forgiveness and clemency, or else I have nothing left to stand on. Or else there was no point in being Yang Chen anymore. What's the matter? She taunted. Afraid you'll kill the Avatar? You weren't such a coward in Bin-Er. Yingsu worked the skin of her forehead with her thumb. Yang Chen could guess that her headache came in shades of orange and yellow.
How do you know I won't go for an immediate lethal shot and escape by myself?
Yang Chen gestured up at Nu Jin, still floating in the air. He's carrying your supplies and shelter, and will flee if you do me in. An experienced mountaineer like you would know your chances of walking out of here unaided are slim to none. Yingsu's mouth flattened.
You are a horrible little girl. You know that?
She did. Quite well, in fact. The firebender sighed when she realized Yang Chen wouldn't relent.
Come on, Yingsu said.
She pointed at a patch of level ground lower down.
We need twice as much distance for this to have a chance at being remotely safe. The Burial.
At least I've left the Avatar state, Yang Chen thought as she parted her hands, the suction between her palms, a model for the larger vacuum she wanted to create. If she perished here, she would have a successor, a guarantee better than the one Chai Si had tried to secure. The Avatar enjoyed a permanence that normal human beings like the Zhongdu of Zhongduri could only envy from afar. She knew what to look from practicing with Yingsu. The thin streak of vapor, the little rings that gave a tell of how far away the blossom would be planted. The key was not to be distracted by the sound. Tear the cloth, rend the garment. Yang Chen ripped her arms wide, the muscles in her back straining. Creating a lack, an absent space, was hard enough when she had time. Benders with only a basic understanding of negative Jing thought air didn't resist. Not true. Air would fight you plenty. There was a pulse between her and Tapa, barely detectable. The beat of an invisible heart. And then, nothing. The only sign of an outcome was the dirt and debris wadding itself into a perfectly circular pile halfway along the basement floor, a breeze blowing toward a center point to fill the void. Yang Chen and Tapa blinked at each other, equally surprised. The collision between two of the most powerful benders to currently walk the Four Nations had resulted in a whimper. Yang Chen's calm was gone. She swallowed a wretch of fear, forcing the livery sourness back down her throat. Her mind raced uncontrollably over all the ways that could have gone wrong. How she wouldn't be able to do that again? Not reliably. Not forever. Her reflexes were at their peak. They'd decline as she got older.
but she did succeed. She'd managed to surround Tapa's nascent burst of purest positive energy with her emptiness. She had embraced the void, only she'd placed it outside herself. Lahima's teachings modified to suit her needs. The blankness that seemed to encase Tapa sloughed away from his eyes and shoulders. He looked at Yang Chen, incredulous and angrier with each passing second, as if he only now comprehended his situation. She managed to smile. Ties go to me. With a furious snort, Tapa sucked in another breath and hurled his head forward again, this time without build-up. He wasn't supposed to be capable of that. Yang Chen was saved only by her tendency to overprepare. She'd made Ying Su stretch her speed to its limits when they'd practiced, just because, just in case, her mantra. She emptied the air again, a knee-jerk reaction born of surprise and fright. Another wicker, the soft huff of a blown-out candle. Yang Chen and Tapa both reeled from the exertion of using their most powerful techniques at a fingersnap, the cost of waging war over nothing itself. Tapa shook his head and put his hand to his nose. It came away glistening red. With alarm, Yang Chen noticed he was bleeding from his ears as well. Not her doing this time, not like how she'd injured Ming Yue. Tapa wasn't capable of firing again so quickly, not without destroying himself from the inside. Stop! Yang Chen shouted. You need help! Tapa inhaled again, churning his blood into a scarlet froth around his nostrils. But this time, his chest failed to reach the size it had during his other attempts. Instead of lunging forward, he jerked to the side, clutching his neck, as if his pathways couldn't handle the energies traveling in or out. A tiny incandescent spark burst over his head. Pop! Then another, and another, like a cloud of attacking fireflies. Pop, 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 pop. I'm sorry. She screwed her foot into the ground. The circle of basement floor around Tapa dropped away, plummeting deep into the earth, taking him with it. She didn't know how far she'd lowered him before the quaking earth knocked her off her feet, and a roaring red glow came hurtling out of the tunnel she'd created. Stones and clods of dirt came raining down. She had no strength left to bend them away. She merely shut her eyes and let the earth pelt her. The least she deserved. She lay there until the bombardment ceased, and then a little while longer. Moments of rest had to be grabbed when they could. Eventually, Yang Chen rolled over and got to her feet. She had a duty to perform. She stood up straight, pressed her hands together, and whispered a funeral benediction for Tapa. Life was sacred. The loss of it had to be recognized. She would never stop believing that. When she was finished, she did a slow turn, searching for a way out. She found the stairs behind her. With the entire convocation hall snapped off, the steps looked like they led nowhere. She trudged up the creaky wooden planks until she reached the street. A small crowd had gathered. The citizens of Taku gawked at her. She didn't know how much they'd witnessed. Surely most of them would have been distracted by the moving convocation hall, or remained clear of the area out of common sense. At the very least, the events hadn't played out the same way as in Bin Ur. She could blame the spectacle on a different spirit. Her lungs hitched in a bad imitation of a laugh. Yang Chen staggered past members of the confused crowd. She didn't care what they thought of the Avatar, emerging from a hole covered in dirt. They could weigh in as they saw fit. And that included Earth King Fei Shan, who stood in the middle of his subjects, disguised in commoner's clothes. His Majesty was furious, frozen in silent rage. He'd come to Taku to obtain first-hand evidence of a conspiracy, secret dealings behind his back that could threaten his grip on power. Well, today he'd gathered plenty. Fei Shan never lacked for intelligence, and Yang Chen could tell he was fitting the pieces together in his mind more or less correctly, all the way back
to the first reports of explosions in the sky over Bin Ur.
It would no longer be possible to deceive him.
Yang Chen bumped past the Earth King without acknowledgement.
I could sleep, she thought.